When Liam Brady's time as Celtic manager got underway, it was an exciting introduction that seemed to echo his on-field footballing abilities, giving the promise of a very bright future. Sadly, these early hopes were to fade, and Brady's time in charge in Glasgow's East End is remembered for a lack of success, one that was overshadowed by off-field events. This is the story of Liam Brady's managerial reign at Celtic Park. As a footballer, Liam Brady was an outstanding talent. He was born on the 13th of February 1956 in Dublin, Ireland, into a family deeply involved in football. Several of his relatives had played at senior level for Irish clubs and the national team. Brady grew up in a football-focused environment and joined St Kevin's Boys before moving to London aged 15. He made his Arsenal debut in 1973, becoming known for his technical skill, particularly his insightful passing abilities. He won the 1979 FA Cup with Arsenal and was twice named the club's Player of the Season. In 1980, he transferred to Juventus, winning two Serie A titles, and later played for Sampdoria, Inter, Ascoli, and also West Ham United. As well as starring at club level, Brady became a popular member of the Republic of Ireland team, earning 72 caps between 1974 and 1990. When he retired in 1990, Brady himself has written that going into management was never something he expected to do, planning instead to become a businessman. By the early 90s, Celtic were struggling to compete with a financially doped-up Rangers. But the boys' problems were more deep-rooted than this. In 1990 and 1991, they were not simply behind Rangers, and in fact finished in fifth place in one of those league seasons. These struggles saw the end of club legend Billy McNeil's second spell in charge at the club. The manner of his dismissal caused anger amongst the supporters, even for those who had wanted him removed from his post. Now that Caesar had left the building, a replacement was needed, one who would be capable of lifting the entire club. The process to choose a new manager was a strange one. Unlike most times when a club such as Celtic approaches those they are interested in appointing, there was instead an open interview process, with people being allowed to apply for the job. Despite his earlier reservations, Brady threw his hat into the ring. Four candidates were interviewed, and it seemed that the real competition for the job was between two Dubliners, Brady and also Frank Stapleton, who had been teammates at both Arsenal and the Republic of Ireland. When the decision was made, on the 19th of June 1991, it was Liam Brady who was seen as the man to steer the good ship Celtic. But there were already concerns being expressed. In the first place, this appointment, which came more than a century after Celtic's maiden game, was the first time that the man in charge hadn't played for the club. So far, there had been only six managers: Willie Maley, Jimmy McStay, Jimmy McGrory, Jock Stein, Billy McNeil on two occasions, and also David Hay. Unfortunately, this surprisingly low number was about to change. After having six managers in 103 years, Celtic were about to have six more in the remainder of the 1990s. Still, Brady not playing for the club was not truly a significant problem. What did concern supporters was his complete lack of managerial experience. As much as he'd been a wonderful player, Brady had not spent any time in a coaching or managerial role that would have prepared him for the expectations of the Celtic Park hot seat. Troubled times lay ahead. Although less than Rangers were spending, Brady was financially backed with some relatively significant signings. In the first season, the most notable of these was Tony Cascarino, at a fee of £1.1 million. But also arriving in the G40 postcode was Gary Gillespie, a highly decorated player with Liverpool, as well as fellow defender Tony Mowbray and goalkeeper Gordon Marshall. The defensive signings were partly to replace Paul Elliott, an influential player who was on the move. These were also an early sign that all wasn't well, because Elliott's departure was not something discussed in advance with the manager, who had not even yet met the player. Brady's first competitive game in charge came at Tannadice. On the 10th of August 1991, fans were entertained by seven goals. It was the best and worst of the Brady years. the boys threw away a 2-goal lead before getting a late winner. Surely now excitement and progress lay ahead. Instead, Celtic struggled to mount a serious title challenge. Rangers were dominant and Celtic lacked the squad depth to compete. Brady's inexperience showed as he attempted to adapt to the Scottish game. Celtic ultimately finished third, behind Rangers and Hearts. The Cups had not offered any moments of brightness, and the Celts failed to even reach a final, far less win any silverware. Both competitions brought their own problems. The Celts faced Airdrie in the League Cup, and in a match where they were comfortable favourites, Celtic were defeated on penalties, the first time they had lost this way in the League Cup. Later came the Scottish Cup semi-final. Playing against Rangers at Hampden, the Ibrox team went down to 10 men after only 10 minutes. Despite the pouring rain, Celtic fans were cheered at the thought that their team would now surely reach the final. Instead, a 1-0 loss meant a thoroughly miserable night. And the less said about Europe, the better. Celtic entered the UEFA Cup and eased past Belgian side Germinal Ekeren in the first round. When drawn against Swiss team Neuchâtel Xamax, it looked like the third round and a European run was a reasonable prospect. What followed was arguably Celtic's worst ever European result. The boys were hammered in Switzerland, falling to a 5-1 defeat. The new manager seemed to have no idea how to cope with going behind in the game. Even a 1-0 victory back in Glasgow was not enough to hide the humiliation associated with this fixture, one that's been remembered for decades to come. By the close of the season, it was clear that it was a period best forgotten for Celtic fans. Arguably the highlight came off the pitch. The signing of Tony Cascarino can be described as a catastrophe, but somehow the club managed to swap him for future captain Tom Boyd. It was now clear that Brady was a man under a great deal of pressure. The 1992-93 season had to see significant progress, or he surely would not last for long in the job. There were more personnel changes. It saw the arrival of Andy Payton, Rudy Vatter, and, most notably, Stuart Slater as the club's record transfer. Midway through the season, Frank McAvenny returned for a second spell too. Despite this, the season was just as much a disappointment as the previous campaign. Celtic again struggled to keep pace with Rangers. The team showed some flashes of quality, but lacked consistency, particularly in key matches. Defensive vulnerabilities and a lack of cutting edge in attack contributed to dropped points. Yet again, Brady's transfer judgment could be questioned. His two biggest signings, Cascarino and Slater, proved to be ineffective and not suited for Celtic or the Scottish game. Celtic were again third, this time finishing behind Rangers and Aberdeen. The Cups were just as disappointing. A Scottish Cup loss to Falkirk and a League Cup semi-final defeat by Aberdeen continued the club's barren trophy spell. The one bright spot came in a single European game. In September, Celtic travelled to Cologne and suffered a 2-0 defeat, which seemed to end their European hopes. However, the return leg at Celtic Park was a famous night, as a 3-0 victory turned the tie on its head. Sadly, another German team, Borussia Dortmund, soon ended the Hoops' European hopes. As season 1993-94 arrived, most fans and commentators were surprised to find Brady still in post. The previous 2 years had been one of Celtic struggles, and the manager did not even have the goodwill that comes from having previously played for the club. Part of the reason that he was still in post was the off-field chaos that engulfed the club. Celtic in this era faced continuous problems, not least a lack of money and crumbling stadium. They also had a board with no idea how to fix this, which possibly gave Brady the leeway to continue as manager. However, within a few weeks of this season starting, it was clear that better days were not coming. The Celts won only 2 of their opening 10 league games, and they also fell to a League Cup semi-final defeat by Rangers. On the 6th of October 1993, the boys travelled to Perth to play St Johnstone. A 2-1 defeat that day proved to be the final straw. The manager penned his resignation letter following the game, and Celtic were off in search of a new permanent manager. This eventually became former Celt Lou McCarrie. However, he would also not last long. Before season 1993-94 concluded, Fergus McCann's takeover had transformed the club, and this included McCarrie's dismissal to be replaced by Tommy Burns. Although Liam Brady's time at Celtic had concluded, it wasn't the end of his footballing life. By the end of 1993, he had been appointed as boss of Brighton and Hove Albion, staying until 1995. He later became head of youth development at Arsenal for almost two decades, and also served as assistant manager of the Republic of Ireland from 2008 to 2010. In reality, Brady's time at Celtic can be seen as something of an impossible task. He was up against a Rangers side with other people's money to spend, and he also had to work in a Celtic park that was riven with boardroom chaos. These factors would have made it extremely difficult for any manager, let alone a novice, to deliver success. Equally, some criticisms can be levelled at him too. Believing he could go to a club such as Celtic for his first managerial post, despite having no previous links with the club, was naive. He also showed an inability to learn and adapt during games, perhaps best emphasised in the 5-1 defeat from Neuchâtel Xamax. Nevertheless, and in his defence, Brady has never sought to hide or blame others for these problems. His biography openly states, quote, "I was a failure as Celtic manager." Whilst he does point to wider challenges, he also openly acknowledges his own lack of suitability for the post. Liam Brady is undeniably one of Ireland's finest ever footballers, and someone who enjoyed a significant and successful time in football. It's just a pity for him, and all the Celtic fans who watched through that period, the same description can't be applied to his time at Celtic Park. If you want to learn more about Celtic history, follow Hail Hail History on Twitter X and Blue Sky. You can also take part in free Celtic walking tours. Visit celticwalkingtours.wordpress.com for more information.